This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After three Republican contests, three different winners, as Romney carries Michigan, a Democratic debate on Martin Luther King's birthday de-escalated the race issue. It's Wednesday, and time for another edition of The Political Junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us, and as usual, there's plenty to talk about. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney got the victory he needed in Michigan yesterday. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John Edwards made nice at last night's debate in Las Vegas. All eyes turn now to the caucuses in Nevada and the Republican primary in South Carolina, both on Saturday. And the Abramoff scandal takes out another senior Republican in the House of Representatives. Ken's back with a trivia question, plus a bit later, former Democratic presidential candidate Bill Richardson joins us to talk about lessons learned on the campaign trail this year. But first, if you have questions about what happened in Michigan and how the races in both parties stand, or if a bit later you want to talk with Governor Richardson, give us a call. 800-989-8255 is the phone number, the email address talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin has made it here to Studio 3A after a long night. Nice to see you, as always.
Hi, Neil.
And Romney was banking an awful lot on winning last night in Michigan, and that he did.
Well, he hadn't won anywhere else. He tried very hard in Iowa. Once upon a time, he was the favorite there. He finished second in Iowa. Once upon a time, he was the favorite in New Hampshire. That was the firewall state for him, and he finished second there, too. So he had to win somewhere, and obviously, it doesn't hurt to win in your home state. But had he not won there, there would have been a lot of questions about his viability.
And indeed, now there are fewer. The race seems to be completely wide open at this point.
It does, and you go into Saturday's contest in South Carolina, and Fred Thompson hasn't won anywhere, and of course he has to win somewhere too to show he's viable. Once upon a time, he was the second coming of Ronald Reagan, going to unite the Republican conservatives behind one candidate. He was hoping it was him, or he, but he hasn't won anywhere, and he's trying to do it in South Carolina. But Romney's an interesting case because on paper, he still has a very formidable chance to win the nomination. He has by far the most money. He could survive a loss in South Carolina, and even Florida, I dare say, given the fact that on February 5th, you have 22 to 24 states with like 1,300 delegates at stake. He has the wherewithal, the financial wherewithal, to survive or at least prosper in a day like that.
And after each one of these contests, we say, you know, this is the most important political development until the next one. So last week, John McCain, everybody was ready to crown him the next presidential nominee of the Republican Party. How much did this hurt him last night?
Well, I think it actually did hurt him, although, again, here we are predicting a week in advance. And as you say, what you say is absolutely true. It's very, very important, very, very crucial until next week, which is then becomes the most crucial event. But, you know, John McCain has to win somewhere, too. He did win Michigan 8 years ago. He won with crossover Democrats and independents. He didn't get that crossover vote this time. He finished well behind Romney. Now, his people did say, well, you know, the Michigan person, I mean, Mitt Romney was born in Michigan. His father was governor there 8 years in the 1960s. So Romney should have won in Michigan is what the McCain people are saying. But South Carolina is a tough fight. It was South Carolina that was the beginning of the end for John McCain in 2000 in his campaign against George W. Bush. So now he has to win somewhere else because he doesn't have much money either.
Well, let's try to figure out what exactly happened in Michigan. Joining us now is Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the newsletter Inside Michigan Politics. He joins us from the studios of Michigan State University in East Lansing. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
My pleasure.
And was it Romney's personal ties to the state that gave him an edge, or was it that one state recession he kept talking about?
I think it was a little of each. The economy was overwhelmingly the major issue here in Michigan, more obviously than in Iowa or New Hampshire. But I think that Romney, long before we ever got to last week and yesterday, had set in motion a great campaign organization here in Michigan. He had piled up a list of endorsements drawing on his father's years as governor back in the 60s. He raised far more money, spent way more money than any other candidate in Michigan. He poured everything into Michigan yesterday, and it paid off for him, and he's back in the race.
Similarly, John McCain, on the rise after that victory in New Hampshire, then went to Michigan and gave the people there some straight talk. Some of the jobs that have left Michigan, he said, aren't coming back. Did that hurt him?
I think it did hurt him, as it turned out. Romney turned that to his benefit. He made it sound like McCain was a bleak Washington insider pessimist. Romney went around saying, look, Michigan is in my DNA. The automobile industry is in my bloodstream. I was born here. I grew up here. I'm not going to let Michigan die. I'm going to bring Michigan back. And I think that despite the people of Michigan's realization that many of these jobs, or most of them, are not coming back, which is what McCain said, they wanted some happy talk. They wanted somebody to come in and tell them, look, we're on your side. I'm on your side. I'm going to turn things around for you. And that's what Romney did, and I think it really paid off for him.
And are you impressed by Mike Huckabee's third-place finish, or should he be concerned?
I'm not thinking that Mike Huckabee hurt himself with his third-place finish here. He had everything to gain, nothing to lose by competing in Michigan as he did. Look, just as recently as 6 weeks ago, he was not considered a factor at all in Michigan. And here he came in third place, and people like Giuliani and Thompson, whom you just mentioned, weren't even on the radar screen. So he did much better. He actually qualified for delegates. He got 16% of the vote. And so I think he thought, if I can slip by either McCain or Romney here in Michigan and finish second, I can really do some damage to them, and I will keep myself going in a stronger position as we go to South Carolina. It didn't work out that way for him, but I don't think he lost any luster by finishing third.
Bill, it's Ken Rudin here. Watching Mitt Romney campaign as an optimist on the economy and somebody who can make things happen, as he did with the Olympics, do you get a sense that that's more effective way of Romney campaigning than opposed to trying to outflank everybody on the right, as he did in Iowa and New Hampshire?
Well, it certainly was far more effective here in Michigan. The real question is it going to be effective if he uses that theme in other states, whatever state he goes to and competes hard in? He made it sound almost, if you listen to the falling stock prices on Wall Street and the potentially looming recession, as though, and he used this metaphor, Michigan is the canary in the mine shaft, and that things are bad in Michigan, and that means things may be getting really bad nationally, and I'm here to maybe tell you I can turn things around. I'm a businessman who's had success in the private sector turning things around. The fact of the matter is that really isn't what's happened here in Michigan. Michigan has simply never emerged from the last recession we had back in 2000. We've been in the doldrums ever since. But in other words, Romney has got to kind of repackage, I think, his economic message for these other states. I think the reason that he went to the right so far on social cultural issues in Iowa particularly was simply because they had 60% of their electorate in Iowa were evangelicals. He had to appeal on that basis. I think he's gotten that out of the way, and I think he'll try to continue on the theme of the economy if he can do it, but he's going to have to fine-tune it state by state.
Back to Michigan for one quick second. We always talk about George Romney and his tenure as governor there, but that was 40 years ago. Do people actually remember George Romney?
Not many. You'd have to be 62 years old at least to have ever voted for George Romney. Some people joke that the only people that remember George Romney live in Arizona now, if they're alive. And so I don't think that many people went into the voting booth yesterday and said, by gosh, I want to vote for George's son. I think it was a complex of all these other things we've been talking about the last 5 minutes.
And, of course, there was a primary on the other side. Of course, there were only two current nominees on the ballot, Hillary Clinton and Dennis Kucinich. Should we read anything at all into Senator Clinton's resounding triumph yesterday?
You know, I think the situation on the Democratic side can be summed up by a great cartoon in the Detroit News last Saturday. It's a picture of Vladimir Putin, and he is saying, how can you people allege that I don't practice democracy? And he's holding up a big ballot, and it says Michigan Democratic Party primary ballot. There are two names on it, Hillary Clinton, nobody else. So that kind of sums up the feeling here in Michigan.
The cartoonist will be hearing from Congressman Kucinich's lawyers in a moment.
I think that the point is that Michigan Democratic voters were disgusted by what happened to this primary, that it was so screwed up and botched that there was no contest. And a lot of them voted for uncommitted, which got 40% of the vote, I think, in protest. And a lot of them voted for uncommitted because that was a stand-in surrogate for Barack Obama and John Edwards. So Hillary Clinton won with 55% of the vote, but that wasn't really, when you think about it, that outstanding of a percentage win. But she'll be able to claim, I won, and I'll disagree with one thing that was in your setup piece, and that was that these delegates are not going to be seated. They will be seated at the Democratic National Convention next summer. Everybody here in Michigan believes that, and so will all the Republican delegates be seated at their convention.
And an email question from Amy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. With the Democratic Party ignoring Michigan, what will that mean for the Democratic nominee chances of winning Michigan in the general election? Will there be a lasting effect?
My personal opinion, it's not going to affect those chances much, if at all. I think by November, we're talking 9 months away, people are going to be thinking, who are the nominees of the two parties? That's the basis on which I'm going to make a decision on who I vote for president, not what happened in some godforsaken primary back in the dead of winter in January that party bosses and politicians screwed up. So I don't think it's going to hurt the Democrats in the long run here in Michigan.
Bill Ballinger, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Neil and Ken.
And thanks for that Putin impersonation. That was excellent.
Bill Ballinger's editor and publisher of the newsletter Inside Michigan Politics, with us today from the studios of Michigan State University in East Lansing. Coming up, much more on Nevada and South Carolina, and we'll be talking with Governor Bill Richardson about his campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination, which ended. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking politics, sandwiched as we are between Michigan and South Carolina and Nevada. In a minute, we'll get a review of the campaign trail from former Democratic presidential candidate Bill Richardson. Later in the hour, NPR's health editor joins us to answer questions about a new variant of a drug-resistant staph infection that appears to be targeting gay men. If you have questions, you can send them now. talk@npr.org. That's our email address. Again, talk@npr.org. But right now, let's continue with politics and guest political editor Ken Rudin. If you have questions for Bill Richardson, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and check out our blog at npr.org. /blog of the nation. That's what the last words there are. Joining us now on the phone from Santa Fe, New Mexico governor and former Democratic presidential candidate Bill Richardson. And Governor, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Nice to be with you again. Thank you.
Now, you decided to drop out of the race last Thursday, so are you feeling enormous relief? You getting any sleep?
Well, right now I have my legislative session. I'm still governor of New Mexico, so I'm dealing with that. I had my state of the state, so I had very little time to decompress, as they say, but I'm now focused on my legislature. I'm planning some international trips, possibly some hostage issues, and then I'm also riding my horse. So I'm trying to rest a little bit, but it's hard when your legislature, it's a 30-day citizens legislature session.
And have you had a chance to reflect on what you've learned in the past few months running for president?
Well, yes, I have, and I really feel that it was an extraordinary experience. I really feel the voters in this country, more than anything, want somebody to bring the country together, and they feel their process is broken, the congressional relationship with the president dysfunctional. And what I've learned is that we're basically a good country. A lot of good people are willing to sacrifice. They're willing to come together. They're willing, if they're shown the common good solution on health care, on energy efficiency, on ending the war. You know, one of the pleasant experiences I had last night, I watched part of the Democratic debate, and it seems the three candidates have all adopted my position of getting all the troops out within a year. You know, if there's one contribution maybe I left in this race, it's that very aggressive policy of having all our troops out, no residual forces within a year, but with a diplomatic plan. That was what I ran on, and I'm glad to see all the candidates running my way.
You said you heard a lot of talk about people really wanting to bring things together. But I also see a lot of Democrats who are really angry, angry going back to an election they thought was stolen in 2000, angry about the way the war has been handled and represented, angry about wiretaps and a lot of other things. And they want a candidate who's confrontational, too.
I'm not sure that's the case. Everybody's angry. I'm angry. But it's how you get things done, and I believe that you need to be, you need to build new coalitions. We need to have public financing to get the special interests out. We need to have coalitions among citizens. We need to engage the states more. Republicans, Democrats, and independents, I think, need to work closer together. You know, if we're just going to get into fights, I just don't think that's going to resolve things. Yeah, a lot of people are angry, but the issue is how we can govern, how we can bring the country together, how we can resolve problems. And so I'm not one of those that advocates being angry to get things done.
You brought a great resume to this campaign as obviously a sitting governor. You worked at the United Nations. You worked to, you know, supervise the nation's nuclear power plants and projects and a lot of things. You mentioned your experience negotiating some hostage releases and that sort of thing. You had some of the funniest, cleverest commercials in Iowa where you presented that resume and were rejected as overqualified. As you look back, you know, what else might you have done?
Well, I raised, for instance, a respectable amount of money, $22 million, $23 million, but it was clearly not competitive with the $100, $120 million that Obama and Clinton did. What would I have done differently? I'm not sure. I think I would have done everything I did. I was hoping to last a little longer into the Western primaries, into Nevada and my own state on February 5th with some of the Hispanic primaries where I knew I was strong. But I simply felt that I'd run out of money in the first place, and I didn't want to go in debt. I didn't do as well as I wanted to in Iowa and New Hampshire. You know, you can't avoid Iowa and New Hampshire, and so we put a lot of resources there. I just don't think it was my message of change and experience caught on as much as the message of just wanting strong change and having a fresh face. I've been around, even though I'm a governor in the state, and I think the voters were looking for inspirational, positive, bring the country together. And I was a little bit, not a Washington insider, but you're right, my experience, you can't escape what you've done before. And so maybe my message was should have been more attuned to the change issue rather than just too much on experience.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is TJ. TJ with us from Phoenix, Arizona. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to apologize in advance if this is something the governor has already addressed, but I had the distinct pleasure of attending one of his town hall meetings in Phoenix with a group of firefighters, and all of us were extremely impressed not only with his resume but the way he handled himself in the town hall and some of his ideas for the future. And since the presidency is not really an option at this point, I'm wondering if the governor has given any thought to perhaps accepting a position of vice president if that was offered to him. And I'll get my answer off the air.
Thanks, TJ.
Well, I love the firefighters, and you know, I think they're the most unsung heroes in our government system. You know what I'm doing right now, Neil? I'm just I haven't decided who to endorse. For instance, I haven't decided whether I'll endorse before February 5th. I might. It would certainly be after Nevada if I did. But that gentleman is very kind. I don't know what the future holds. I never close off any options, but I am immensely happy being governor of New Mexico, a job that I love where I've made a difference. So that's my answer, Neil. I'm giving a politician answer, and I fully back that politician non-conclusive answer.
Okay, well, we'll let you get away with that for now, but as soon as you caught up in your sleep, we're going to pin you down. Ken?
Hi, Governor. A little bit on the same kind of question, but you were asked this question a million times when you were running for president. And again, you just said you would not close off any options. If the Democratic Party in New Mexico comes to you and say that they need you to win that New Mexico Senate seat that Pete Domenici is giving up, have you ruled that out? I mean, you've said no when you were running for president, but have you given it any second thought since you left the race?
No, I'm definitely out of that. I'm backing Congressman Tom Udall, who I think is our strongest candidate, who I believe who helped me a lot in my presidential race. No, that is definitely out. I love being a CEO. I don't need to go back to Washington. I've been there long enough. I love being governor. So that definitely is out. And Congressman Udall, I believe, is our strongest candidate and will win the Senate seat.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jordy. Jordy with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question for the governor is, Governor, it seems that yourself plus Joe Biden and Chris Dodd were probably the most experienced public servants running for the Democratic nomination this year. And I was wondering what your thoughts are as to why you three were among the first to drop out.
Well, first, we didn't have the resources of the other candidates. That's number one, financial resources. And, you know, it's not that we were outspent. We were hugely outspent. I was outspent 10-1 by Clinton and Obama. And it's very hard to compete in that regard. Secondly, you know, as I said earlier, we represented experience, and the three of us had been tested. But I believe we didn't represent change as much as Senator Obama and some of the other candidates did. And so the public, I think, was thirsting for change. And I try to combine both in my campaign, change and experience. But somehow that didn't resonate as much as I thought it would. So those were the reasons. I think Senators Biden and Dodd, enormously qualified, but perhaps they were hampered by the fact that they've been in Washington all these years, and I'd been in Washington, but I'm a governor of a state, and I thought I'd escaped that Washington syndrome, but apparently I was viewed by some as having strong the experience cachet, but somehow the inspiration for change that they were looking and went elsewhere.
Governor Richardson, thank you very much for your time again, and good luck in your next time throughout this term as you carry on as governor of New Mexico.
Nice to be with you.
Appreciate your time. Governor Bill Richardson joining us from his office in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And as his departure from the race, does that leave it a three-way race pretty much, Ken Rudin?
Well, the Senate people will tell you that the congressman from Ohio is still in the contest. But yes, it is a three-way race for the Democratic nomination. And, you know, a lot of people are even writing off John Edwards. But if you look at polls, and I know polls are a dirty word, especially what we saw in New Hampshire, but the poll for Nevada's Saturday caucuses show a three-way race between, you know, among Obama, Clinton, and Edwards. So, yes, but I guess at some point John Edwards is going to have to win somewhere. He says he's in for the long haul. He was on your show the other day. He says he does not have to win South Carolina on January 26th, but clearly he doesn't have the money and the campaign apparatus that both Obama and Clinton have.
Now let's talk about last night's Democratic debate. This is in Nevada, which holds a caucus on Saturday, and there were interesting developments from it. For the first thing, Senator Obama and Senator Clinton both agreed that maybe all this talk about race and gender and talk by, outrageous talk by some of their surrogates ought to go by the wayside, and they agreed to de-escalate that. But there was an interesting distinction on how they viewed the differences of what the president's job is. Let's begin. This is Senator Barack Obama talking about his view of the presidency.
Being president is not making sure that schedules are being run properly or the paperwork is being shuffled effectively. It involves having a vision for where the country needs to go.
And a very different view from Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton.
I do think that being president is the chief executive officer. And I respect what Barack said about setting the vision, setting the tone, bringing people together. But I think you have to be able to manage and run the bureaucracy.
And that in a capsule seems to be a lot of what they've been arguing about. One person with the vision, the other person saying, look, you need somebody to translate that vision into actual running the government. It is the chief executive office.
And, you know, that's actually what was behind the argument about race to begin with, because at one point Hillary Clinton said shortly after the New Hampshire primary that for all that Martin Luther King did on the behalf of civil rights, you needed a Washington establishment like President Johnson to make it happen. So that unfortunately escalated into an argument about race. But I think that's the two ways the two candidates see the office. Barack Obama has this vision. He has this inspiration. He believes he can bring people together. Hillary Clinton, having been in Washington for a long time, feels that she's the one who could make government work.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our political junkie, who joins us every Wednesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Paul. Paul with us from Chicago.
Hey.
Go ahead, please.
Good. Just two quick observations. One, the issue of race, I think it probably will benefit Barack in the short term. But I'm concerned that in the long term, if he becomes the nominee, maybe that's going to turn off some white voters. Secondly, just concern about President Clinton, with him being out there at the attack dog. I really like to see my ex-president like Elvis statesperson, and I understand that, you know, he's obviously defending his wife, but doesn't that diminish the presidency or the, you know, the state of being an ex-president?
Ken, a lot of people wanted to hand Bill Clinton a hammer and say, go build some homes for Habitats for Humanity.
Like Jimmy Carter.
Exactly. Imagine George Sr. doing that on behalf of his son. You know, I mean,
That might have been seen as unseemly. Indeed, some of President Clinton's remarks, Ken, were seen as unseemly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the purpose of a running mate is to be the attack dog. And you wonder if Hillary Clinton will need a running mate, given the fact that that Bill Clinton has been so harsh on Barack Obama. But earlier, the point you're making is very valid, that in the short term, this could very well help Barack Obama, certainly in the January 26th South Carolina primary, where more than 50% of the electorate is African-American. But ultimately, he doesn't want to run as a black candidate. He wants to run as somebody who could unite the country, certainly unite blacks and whites. And I think focusing on race in the long run would certainly hurt the Obama effort.
Thanks very much for the call, Paul.
Thank you.
And Ken, we've talked a little bit about South Carolina coming up on the Republican side. The Democratic South Carolina primary is afterwards, so we'll get to that in a later broadcast. But looking ahead now to Nevada, the caucuses in Nevada, and still a lawsuit as to whether casinos are an appropriate place to have a Democratic caucus.
Right. And again, you know, Hillary Clinton was very armed with that in last night's debate. She spoke a lot about Nevada issues. You know, if you think the arguments about race were kind of yucky, well, yucca was the issue yesterday by Hillary Clinton. Sorry, Neil.
You're making a mountain out of a molehill here.
Right. But it really is going to be a lot on local issues. And then you go to South Carolina, which will be the since there's no Democratic contest in Florida, they're not competing there. It'll be South Carolina and then into Super Tuesday, where Obama, Edwards, and Hillary are going to fight it out.
And finally, in non-campaign news, Representative John Doolittle, Republican of California, the subject of a federal investigation over his ties to Jack Abramoff, announced this week he will not seek re-election when his term is up at the end of the session. Another senior Republican in the House, a victim of the Abramoff scandal.
Yes, but probably good news for the Republican Party. It's a solidly Republican district. He barely won re-election in 2006 because of his ties to Jack Abramoff, and I think Republicans both in Washington and back in California are breathing a sigh of relief that he's not going to run again.
And as you look at the fallout from this scandal at this point, how many representatives has it cost, and are there any more still waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Well, certainly it probably cost the Republicans the majority in the House in 2006. You know, there's Bob Ney, there were Tom DeLay, there were other folks, and there was Mark Foley, although that was not a Jack Abramoff-related scandal, but it was the culture of corruption that Nancy Pelosi liked to talk about so much. Now, the Republicans...
Duke Cunningham would have fit in.
Duke,
then again,
course,
not Abramoff, but
right,
certainly corruption.
Absolutely. And Conrad Burns, the senator from Montana, who took more money from Jack Abramoff than any other senator. So, obviously, it hurt the Republican Party. There's still some residue effects, like as you see with Doolittle, but ultimately the Republican Party, if they're going to make a comeback, really want to turn the issue back over on the Democratic side.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much. We'll see you next Wednesday.
And I'll tell you my trivia question after the show.
Okay.
Okay. After the show.
After the show. Yeah. After the show, we'll get to that trivia question. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and likes to twist the knife in the host's back every once in a while. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Coming up, a new strain of drug-resistant bacteria appears to target gay men. We'll take your questions. NPR's health editor Joe Neal will join us to give you some answers. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neal Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, all right, if you were listening a moment ago, I forgot Ken Rudin's trivia question today. I apologize. We're going to post the trivia question on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. So if you'd like to answer the trivia question you haven't heard yet, go to our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And, Ken, I'm sorry.